I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! All right, good morning and welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB, here weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock to provide everybody a safe space for independent thought, beholden to no party, no politician, running the Underground Railroad out of the two-party plantations. I have got clips today from our new CDC director. I'll have to look up and even see what her name is. I'm already tired of seeing her. I didn't pay attention when there was a change when Joe Biden came in, but she's sure there, and we certainly are hearing from our medical experts again. And she did a tearful address to the nation yesterday while she flat out lied about going off script, near as I could tell. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I don't know. But it also highlighted what she said in this clip, really kind of showed me what the difference is between people whose whole life is medicine, I guess, and the rest of us normies out here. I don't know what percentage of people these health authorities are and the bureaucrats that serve them or the bureaucrats that get them to do what they want to do, however it works. But it's maybe 1% of the population. And they completely ignore the 99%, the considerations that 99% of the population have. Anyway, we're going to get to this clip in just a second. And I ran across I think it's Slate Magazine has got a podcast called Gabfest. And boy, oh boy, you should hear. They have an Asian woman on there really capitalizing. I believe she's got a book out. She is going to be at the vanguard of the idea that the Asian community is now oppressed. They are officially a recognized, despite all of their tremendous successes in the United States. The Asian community was so successful that Harvard started to keep them out. Wasn't it? I think it was Harvard that said they were going to stop giving so many scholarships or giving so many admissions to Asians because they were just a slam dunk to get in because they performed so well academically in high school. So they just said, we're getting too many Asians in this university, so we're going to cut down on the number of Asians we want. They've been so successful, they overwhelmed Harvard University. But they're being cast now as a victim group. And I've got this nut job woman. I mean, you should hear her try to do this dance today. Between who's more oppressed. The whole idea is white supremacy and how, you know, sometimes whites suppress and abuse the Asian community, but sometimes they'd rather suppress and abuse the black community, so they enlist the help of the Asian community to suppress the black community, and then when they're done doing that, the white people go back to suppressing the Asians. I mean, it's insane. You just have to listen to this clip. So we'll do that in just a little bit. And then we've got some stuff on spending and Russia. I ran across a story just a little while ago here that just shows, you know, Vladimir Putin is probably a thug. I think he's got money hidden. He certainly is a strong man in Russia. Russia has its challenges. I'm not a fan of any government, and I'm sure Russia's is no good either. But I got to tell you, in an insane world, Russia is looking really sane. Sure would be nice if we were buddies with them. It's a shame that we have forced them to become allies with China instead. So anyway, we'll get to that as well. And if anybody wants to call in, the number here is 601-879-0002. Let's go ahead and get into our CDC director here. This just really struck me as just completely tone deaf. And again, the problem that we have, as I see it, be it... Now, Anthony Fauci, I believe he has motives. He has monetary motives. He has control motives. This guy is he is the swamp. Anthony Fauci is the swamp. He's the swamp of our government as the highest paid. That's always just the biggest insult to me, is that Anthony Fauci is the highest paid federal employee, making over $500,000 a year from the U.S. taxpayer. He's at the tip of the spear. Highest paid, more than the president, is Anthony Fauci, a man that has just absolutely spread fear and division and desperation across the country. And the taxpayers reward him with a little over 40 grand a month. It's really very despicable to see. But Anthony Fauci has motives, but when I look at people like Thomas Dobbs, I don't know if Thomas Dobbs has got ulterior motives in what he has done, but what I do know is that Thomas Dobbs is apparently incapable of seeing anything beyond this tiny virus, which is, you want to talk about narrow-minded. This is a virus you can't even see with the naked eye, yet is the only thing that he can focus on and just can tune out everything around him. And that's what these health authorities do. This was the CDC director yesterday. Her name is Rochelle Walensky. This tweet is, CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky goes off script with an emotional plea to the public about a, quote, impending doom, unquote, following rise in COVID cases. So here she is appealing to people with emotion, getting, I don't know if she's an actress or if she is this really this big of a hypochondriac.
I'm going to pause here. I'm going to lose the script, and I'm going to reflect on the recurring feeling I have of impending doom.
Now, she says she's going to lose the script in this, if you see this in video, but her eyes are darting down to where she would typically be reading a teleprompter, reading the script, and she's continuing to look down. So I don't know if she's actually breaking this. She could even be lying about that, which is really kind of bizarre, but maybe not. Here's what she had to say.
We have so much to look forward to, so much promise and potential of where we are, and so much reason for hope. But right now, I'm scared. I know what it's like as a physician to stand in that patient room, gowned, gloved, masked, shielded, and to be the last person to touch someone else's loved one because their loved one couldn't be there. I know what it's like when you're the physician, when you're the healthcare provider, and you're worried that you don't have the resources to take care of the patients in front of you. I know that feeling of nausea when you read the crisis standards of care and you wonder whether there are going to be enough ventilators to go around and who's going to make that choice. And I know what it's like to pull up to your hospital every day and see the extra morgue sitting outside.
So there you go. And I'm convinced of it now when watching this clip again. She says she's off script, but she is most definitely reading all of those things. There's no doubt about it. So I'm not really sure why she even bothered to say that. This perfectly highlights the world the medical establishment lives in. She goes through to recount, as a physician, I know what it's like to X, Y, or Z. But what she doesn't understand is we know what's the other parts of society are like. We know what it's like to be a parent and to see your child fall behind academically and socially for an entire year in their very short, brief, young lives. We know what it's like to see a parent see your child sink into anxiety and depression, which is not normal for a child, by the way, because their lives have been stripped from them. Because the adults around them are scared. Again, this is for a disease that basically doesn't lay a glove on anybody under 19 years old. But see, she's not coming at this as a parent. She's looking at her entire worldview is through this one hospital setting. And that everything outside of the hospital, across the land, all needs to go, according to her, dictates, so that she doesn't see this sad sight in a hospital. I can only imagine what it's like, luckily. I can only imagine what it's like to be a parent who sees a child suffer so badly that they begin harming themselves. We've seen cuttings going up with kids stripped of all of their peers for prolonged periods of time. And some of them, I can't imagine this, but maybe the CDC director should. The children and adults too, that are killing themselves. A dramatic rise in suicides. I do know what it's like to be a business owner, and I can imagine what it's like to see your business, the one that you've built over the course of a lifetime. We've seen the stories, 20, 30 years. We know small business owners get a successful business, put their heart and soul into it, along with all of their assets, and to watch that just slowly destroyed over the course of just a few months. I know what it's like to be a business owner and have to let your valuable employees go and watch them face financial ruin. I know what it's like to be in the hospitality industry and to just see your work just destroyed, your entire industry just destroyed by absolutely pointless, unscientific restrictions that are just arbitrarily forced upon you by bureaucrats and health authorities. And I know what it's like, for sure, we all do. I know what it's like to see your society fundamentally changed for a virus with a 99.7% survival rate. The vast majority of people who get it don't even know they have it. I know what it's like as an American to see your rights be stripped from you and then just given back to you piecemeal, you know, with restrictions and warnings and admonitions to behave yourself. And then I know what it's like as an American to see your government strip us bare. I mean, just take a sledgehammer to our entire economy and then to paper over these disastrous decisions so that we don't pay a price for it now. Us comfy adults, these same children that we've terrorized for the past year with the hypochondria of the adults in this country, we're going to actually saddle them with a bunch of debt to paper over the financial destruction that has taken place during this past 12 months. So see, she can picture, she knows what it's like. She's addressing you as a physician. She knows what it's like to be in the hospital setting and to hold the hand of somebody as they're dying. I got to tell you, it's always tragic when somebody dies, but I think this is pretty much what healthcare workers signed up for. And you know, the thing that's lost in all this when I see these things, as we memorialize these people, as we put flags at half staff, when you look at the numbers, and if you are to believe that every one of the deaths that they've attributed to COVID is actually a death from COVID, when we all know, even those people that are most hysterical about COVID, we all know that many of those deaths are people who died with COVID, not from COVID. They died of heart disease or cancers. They died of other diseases, but they tested positive for COVID, so they're thrown in there. But even with the big numbers that they show in COVID, what about the other 80 to 90% of people who will die this year, not of COVID? They are completely forgotten. You would think that if we just do what they say, if we had just done what they said, there would have been no tragedies this past year. Every tragic death that occurred during 2020 and thus far in 2021 and the ones we risk going forward now are all the fault of states that have repealed their restrictions. Because if they hadn't done that, if people had just behaved themselves, if they'd just done what they're told, there would have been no tragic deaths in 2020 or 2021, when the fact of the matter is about 80 to 90% of the deaths still would have occurred. Yet we would have just accepted it as part of life, like we do every single year when people die. I don't know if my point is really well taken with this, the tunnel vision. And what's sad is that so many Americans have been sucked into this tunnel vision. They have been led to believe that life revolves around one single tiny microscopic virus to the exclusion of every other consideration within the country, be emotionally, financially, mentally. So many people have been sucked into these people's worlds, and that is absolutely abnormal, and we don't seem to, we still do not seem to be coming out of this. I heard Jim Thorne talking on the show before I came on. He said he thinks we're on the backside of this thing. I got to tell you, I have my doubts. I'll explain that in just a second when I come back. Stay with me. If you need an experienced lawyer that you can trust, contact the law firm of Danks, Miller & Corey. Our lawyers represent clients and small businesses across Mississippi. With over 100 years of combined legal experience, we have the expertise to handle even the most complex legal matters. When you need a lawyer to fight for you, don't compromise. Call Danks, Miller & Corey. You can reach us at 601-957-3101, 601-957-3101, or online at danksmillercorey.com. I blew right past my quotes of the day, which are apropos for the subject matter that I'm covering, I think. I think I'm on the right side of this quote. I'm really not sure. I jumped right into our CDC director and her tearful thing. You know, I would really like to give her the benefit of the doubt. It's got to be incredibly sad to watch people die. Anybody in the medical field who has to deal with life or death. You know, my father's just been in the hospital, and I've told the nurses, each one of them, God love you for doing what you do. I don't know how you do it. I'm just not wired that way. I don't like to be around people who are miserable. I'm uncomfortable around it, and I think it's sad. And to go in there every day and be able to lead a life while you see that kind of misery every day, and you help people, that God love you. And so maybe the CDC director is actually a decent human being who's just really concerned for people. That's just not my experience with high-level government bureaucrats. It just almost doesn't matter. Across the board, you find out they've got some other motives. They've got some other financial interests in the things that they do. You look at the CDC, you look at the FDA, you look at the National Institutes of Health, they've all got all kinds of interlocking directorates on with pharmaceutical companies and patents that they enjoy every year. I mean, it is just very hard to assume that these are actual real people. I wish I could give this woman the benefit of the doubt that her tearful rejoinders to us to be careful. I've got one more clip from her that were sincere just in her care for the American people. It's just, she would certainly be the exception and not the rule if that was the case. The quote of the day is from Marcus Aurelius. He said, "The object of life is not to be on the side of the majority, but to escape finding oneself in the ranks of the insane." And I think this is what I'm doing, of course. I guess it's a matter of perspective. There's a lot of people out there, as I told you yesterday. I sat at a table of six people on Friday night. I was the only one non-vaccinated, and I can guarantee you five people at that table thought I was the insane one. When I looked at those five and thought, wow, you just took an experimental vaccine. You're all, you know, relatively young and healthy. That feels a little weird to me. So I guess it's all a matter of perspective, but I am trying to escape finding myself in the ranks of the insane. So this is the CDC director again. She went in. She's appealing to us, not just as the CDC director, but as just another human being like the rest of us. I guess she hasn't had any family problems that, I mean, we're talking about millions of children have been horribly affected by not the COVID, because COVID doesn't lay a glove on them, by the reaction to COVID.
So I'm speaking today not necessarily as your CDC director, or not only as your CDC director, but as a wife, as a mother, as a daughter, to ask you to just please hold on a little while longer.
You know, does she realize that that loses a little bit of power after a year? We've just celebrated the one-year anniversary of 2 weeks to flatten the curve, right? 15 days to flatten the curve. And the funny thing about that is that even with flattening the curve, that was just designed to push out the deaths and the hospitalizations. They didn't ever say that they were going to stop them. They changed that when we started going into the fall, where they made you think that if you just did everything they said, that they would stop. Like I said, they'll stop all deaths, all tragedy in the country. If we would just listen to our overlords, stupid people would stop dying of anything. That's the way they make it feel. But at the very beginning of this thing, it was just flatten the curve. Hey, we know people are going to get sick. They were actually right then. As I say, virus gonna virus. But they said, we know people are going to get sick. We know people are going to be hospitalized. We know people are going to die. Let's just not do it all together, because that overwhelms the hospital system. But she's asking, just hang on a little bit longer. You know, I don't know how many times you can say that when you start with a 15-day, and then that goes to a month, and that goes to 3 months, to 6 months, to 9 months, to a year, and then after a year, they tell you, hold on just a little longer. And this is a boy cried wolf situation right now.
I so badly want to be done. I know you all so badly want to be done. We are just...
I am done. I was done after about the first 2 months of this thing. I was done. I realized this was not something that I needed to fear any more than I need to fear driving down the road, knowing full well I could get this thing and it may ricochet around to me some weird way and I may end up dying. I'm okay with that. I signed up, apparently, for life on planet Earth with all of its dangers and all of its risks. I kind of know the deal. But I'd rather live until I die, not just sit around and wait for grim death.
Almost there, but not quite yet.
Not quite. Hang on.
And so I'm asking you to just hold on a little longer, to get vaccinated when you can, so that all of those people that we all love will still be here when this pandemic ends.
I hate to break this to her and to anybody else listening. This may come as a shock. So a little bit of a trigger warning here. Next year, about 1% of the people that you know, particularly the elderly people, right, they're going to be gone. And the year after that, it's going to happen again. And the year after that, it's going to happen again. About 1% of the people in the United States die every single year. And yet we don't really cry about that normally. Now, I know people will say, well, this is different. This is a specific. But again, the numbers, if you even take the big CDC numbers, I mean, this thing has not been just wiping out people wholesale. It has killed some older people maybe a few months before they were going to die anyway. Tragic as that is. And then a lot of people in this COVID count have been killed, have died with COVID, not from COVID. It didn't take them out. But the bottom line is, it doesn't matter how careful we are. This year, we're going to lose about 1% of the people we know. And in 2022, we're going to lose about 1% of the people we know. And that will be tragic, too, even if they die of other things. Slips and falls. The flu. Cancers. Heart disease. Dementia. All of these things will be very sad. And there's just nothing we can do about it, because that's kind of the deal. You get a 75 to 90 years, pretty much, for the vast majority of people, right? And then the further you get past 75, the more likely you are to become that 1% that doesn't see the next year. Joe Biden in his empty chair. How many empty chairs are we going to see this Thanksgiving? Don't get together for Thanksgiving and for Christmas, because you look around and see everybody seated there. Next year, there'll be an empty chair if you all congregate. Well, I got to tell you, Joe, probably going to be an empty chair anyway. If you got grandparents at the table, empty chair happens every couple of years. You got four grandparents, right? There comes a time where slowly but surely, one, two, three, four, all those chairs are eventually empty. It's this obsession with this one thing. Like, if we just do what they say, then we'll all be okay. This also did, it's interesting too to juxtapose it, and I appreciate the article Zero Hedge that did this, you know, with this woman's tearful pleas to, you know, stop the reopenings, hang in there, don't get together yet, keep your mask on, make sure you're doing all these other things. What's happened in Texas? You know the catastrophe they told you was going to take place in Texas, right, as soon as they got rid of their restrictions. Well, it's just interesting. It just hasn't exactly happened. On Saturday, Texas's 7-day COVID positivity rate reached an all-time low of 5.27%, while hospitalizations fell to their lowest level since October, according to the latest state data. State recorded 2,292 new cases, about 500 fewer on average from the last week, and 107 new deaths. The number of people hospitalized with coronavirus, meanwhile, dipped to 3,308. That's in all of Texas. In other words, lifting the mask mandate and reopening the state did not lead to the health catastrophe predicted by all of the, air quotes here in the studio, experts, and exactly the opposite happened. Same things happened in Mississippi. Same things happened in Florida the entire time. They were wrong about Florida. So, again, this tearful, she's either delusional, she's wrapped in the cocoon of the hospital setting where some tragic COVID deaths have happened, or she is just completely disingenuous control freak. I don't really know. I don't know this woman. I don't trust her. I don't trust her because she's a government bureaucrat, and they are either tragically wrong or they've got ulterior motives. I'm going to come back. Ron DeSantis, though, at least Ron DeSantis is on the right side of this thing. Again, the guy is definitely jockeying for president of the United States in 2024. There's no doubt about that. Somebody else is being mentioned for 2024. I've got a story about that. But anyway, Ron DeSantis, kind of the bright spot. I got to tell you, I love you, Mississippi. We'll see which way you go. I'm very concerned with Mississippi and vaccines because we're so vaccine happy here. We'll talk to Stephen Utroska on Thursday of what's going on in the legislature. But as many things as they have tried to shove on our vaccination schedule for our kids, and they don't give you any way out of it because, you know, our legislators, this 170 superhumans that we allow to run our legislature here, says you're not smart enough to figure out whether or not your child needs to be vaccinated. It's really not your choice. It's their choice. They know better than you. I'm very nervous about them and any COVID-19 vaccines. If they really back me up against a wall, I may be calling my governor DeSantis before it's all over. We'll be right back. Mike Madison here. Have you heard about Lee Garland's latest offer? You know, he's the real estate agent with the Moving On team at RE/MAX Alliance who will guarantee the sale of your home. Well, he's up the ante once again, and not only will he guarantee the sale, but he wants the opportunity to offer you cash before you ever even place it on the market. That's right. Lee Garland with the Moving On team at RE/MAX Alliance is and represents cash buyers who are willing to buy your home as is today. Can you imagine not having to jump through a bunch of hoops, not having to scramble around to meet the buyer's needs, and not having to do repairs for some crazy home inspection? If so, call Lee Garland at 601-983-1130 or 601-941-2424 for more details on his cash offer and or guaranteed sale. Again, call Lee Garland at 601-983-1130, 601-983-1130 or 601-941-2424.
I need your arms around me. I need to feel your touch. I need your understanding. I need your love so much.
You tell me. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Phone number here, 601-879-0002. Ron DeSantis is putting a bit of a line in the sand, which I think is nice to see. I sure would like to see. And there are a lot of things that are going on right now around the country that you'd like to see happening in Mississippi, in this red state. Things like protecting the Second Amendment. We talked to Stephen Utroska last week, and they passed just kind of a statement saying we're supporting the Bill of Rights here in Mississippi, but they didn't really take any, it's nothing with any enforcement teeth to it. But there seems to be some bright spots around the country. Now, again, Tate Reeves is one of the first ones to lift the mask mandate, so I'll give him credit for that. It never should have been put in place in the first place, but at least he was one of the first ones out. But that's just not good enough for me. I've got a pretty high bar. Ron DeSantis is kind of setting that bar.
Make some comments. And I've said stuff previously, but we are not supporting doing any vaccine passports in the state of Florida. No one was more aggressive about getting this out. If you look at all the different points throughout Florida, whether it's a hospital, county health department, a retail pharmacy, a drive-through sites, church sites, all this stuff, it's important. But we always said we want to provide it for all, but mandate it for none. And that Amen. Was something that while it was advised to take, particularly if you're vulnerable, we were not going to force you to do it. So there was never under discussion any mandates to take vaccines. We will not have COVID vaccines mandated in Florida. The flip side of that, though, with these vaccine passports is it's completely unacceptable for either the government or the private sector to impose upon you the requirement that you show proof of vaccine to just simply be able to participate in normal society. You want to go to a movie theater? Should you have to show that? No. You want to go to a game? No. You want to go to a theme park? No. So we're not supportive of that. I think it's something that people have certain freedoms and individual liberties to make decisions for themselves.
What? What did he say? I mean, this is like news. I wonder if this was reported. This should have been breaking news.
I also wonder, it's like, okay, you're going to do this, and then what, give all this information to some big corporation? You want the fox to guard the hen house? I mean, give me a break. I think this is something that has huge privacy implications. It is not necessary to do. You know, we're going to have hit 3.5 million seniors that have gotten shots sometime this week, likely 75% of seniors. It's important to be able to do it. But at the same time, we are not going to have you provide proof of this just to be able to live your life normally. And I'm going to be taking some action in an executive function, emergency function here very shortly. But I've spoken, I just spoke with the speaker about it, and I'm telling Wilton publicly, so hopefully he agrees with me. But we do need, we need the legislature to come in and just say this is not happening in Florida.
Yeah. So there's Florida. You know, it's, I read a story yesterday about the Amish community. Amish community, I guess it was in Pennsylvania. I think it was talking about one particular area. And they're studying them and saying it looks like they're essentially at complete herd immunity. COVID was very contagious in their community. They figured that about 90% of their residents had had COVID, but the Amish are very vaccine hesitant. About 75% of the Amish, I was surprised. I didn't know if maybe they were just completely against vaccinations, but they're apparently they're not. But about 75% of them polled said they were not going to take a vaccine, yet they've reached herd immunity. And it made me realize that that's why this frenetic push to get everybody vaccinated now. You got to do it now. Hurry up. Get on the bus. Go get your shot. It's at every drugstore. It'll be at your schools. We'll have it at the Jackson Medical Mall. We're going to bring it to your house. Go get that shot. Get that shot. Get that shot. Get that shot. Because they knew that actual herd immunity was coming. And then there would be no appetite for the shots. What's funny is a lot of people are getting these shots after having COVID. They've already got the antibodies that would make them fare better if they were re-exposed to it or have suffered no consequences to it. But they are rushing the vaccine program, not for the health of Americans, but to get these shots in arms, get the dollars into the pharmaceutical coffers. Some of those will flow right back to the politicians before her actual herd immunity was reached. That's what the rush with vaccines is, not to save lives. To make sure there's still an appetite for these things before everybody goes, oh, look at this. The cases are down. The deaths are down. Apparently this thing ripped through us and we survived it. And now here we go. We're all set. Next. They can't have that. The AP, the propaganda around coronavirus is palpable. I'm going to play a song for you in just a second. It's become COVID has become quite the musical hit. I played a couple of songs on Friday. Broadway productions about going and getting your vaccine and socially distancing and continuing to wear your masks. They go full court press with the propaganda on that. AP has actually got an article. Here's the title of it. Dear Normal, were you really that great in the first place? And this is to set the stage of, you know, and this story goes on and she's the Sonia somebody writes this article and she says, yeah, I mean, at the beginning, I kind of wanted us to get back to normal too. But the longer this has gone on, I'm just thinking, well, I mean, maybe normal wasn't so great anyway. Maybe this is the better way. Here's one little paragraph out of it. She goes on talking about how everybody was wanting to get back to normal, but the further away we get from it, the more cracks have been exposed in the old normal. So she says, by then, my brain was screaming, no way. Do others feel it too? Cringing every time normal, old normal, any normal is uttered. That to go back to what you would mean, we don't question the way things were, that we ignore the cracks that have been exposed, and that we forget the lessons, good and bad, that have been learned? She believes that this COVID, this at least new normal for the past year, it's kind of helped us. It's opened our eyes to some of the problems we had before. I'm not sure exactly what she's addressing. I couldn't get past that part of the story. I couldn't stomach it anymore. But this is the idea that, oh, this is actually better. masks on everybody for years and years, not seeing faces, not seeing smiles in the grocery store, living your life in fear. It's better. Children with remote learning, not seeing their kids, being terrified to come next to another biological entity. That's better. I think we were a little too friendly in the past anyway. All the hugs and the kisses on the cheeks and the hand-holding. It was really just, that's just not what we should be doing. This is much, much better. Speaking of propaganda, so here you go. Disney's gotten into the act, apparently. I played some Broadway stuff last week. Now, this is Disney. I guess they want to get down there to the kids. You know, any minute now they're going to be rolling out the shots for the kids. They're testing it on kids as young as 6 months old right now. Isn't that the sign of a really healthy society, that you would actually experiment on your infants for a vaccine that addresses a disease that doesn't affect any of them? They have no danger under the age of 19. Yet it doesn't stop us from testing on them. That fact still floors me. It's why I keep bringing it up. But anyway, we got to get the kids all primed up and ready to go for the vaccine as soon as it's approved, and they get the emergency use authorization for the kiddies out there. We got to get them all fired up.
I'm going to go get my vaccine and get back to my prime. Well, I've never seen a vaccine made in quite so little time.
Yeah, me either.
We're going to plan insane events like we couldn't do before. Once everybody gets their shots, the 20s, they will roar. Thus far, a rather uninspiring thing. Oh, I just can't wait for vaccines.
Well, vaccines are completely unnatural. If you think
no more need to stay home.
Now, I did my own research.
No more isolation.
With a space.
You hear the pointed little, the nagging little voice in there that's the pest. It's the person who said, well, I did my own research. This in this cartoon is, you know, the annoyance, the idiot in this play. It's the one shouting from the rooftops, I can't wait to get my vaccine. That's the hero of this story, not the little pest who says, I don't know about this vaccine. This is pure propaganda, and it's training the kids, don't you question either. And if you can get the kids to not question this stuff when they're kids, they certainly won't question it as adults. But then again, they're going into a society where hundreds of millions of adults already don't question this, so I guess it just keeps the status quo.
Oh,
it's all a bloody hoax. See? Make the buffoon the person that's not on board with mass experimental vaccination of an entire population.
Free to socialize all day.
Well, you're free to, when you get the vaccine, you'll be free to socialize. This is in the United States of America. Right now, you are not free to socialize. To socialize. I want to end the war on drugs. I want you to be able to sit on your couch at home if you want to and smoke a joint. I know a lot of people get upset about that. You think that's terrible, but I think it's just part of freedom. This freedom to do whatever you want to, if you're not harming anybody else. But they've criminalized socializing. So you may disagree, but I hope we can all agree that maybe criminalizing socialization between human beings, probably not a good thing in what is supposedly the freest country of the world.
I do that anyway. No more COVID in our way. You'd know they're just injecting tracking chips if you were smart.
See, here is the pest, right? The wacko. You know, they're just injecting tracking chips in you. You see what this propaganda is?
We don't need advice from anti-vaxxers for a start.
Oh.
If this is where America is headed, count me out. While you sheep wait for your doses, I've a double dose of doubt. This liberal mind control is quite obscene. Oh, I just can't wait for vaccines.
The crescendo. Here it comes.
Everyone who leans left. Moderna have the key. Let's do it for the herd immunity.
the herd immunity that would have come without Pfizer and Moderna had we just kind of cooled our jets for a little bit and not freaked out so badly, like the Amish community. It won't be long before a 5-degree. Oh, we just can't wait for vaccines. Oh, we just can't wait for vaccines. Oh, we just can't wait for vaccines. Brought to you by Pfizer and Moderna.
Think back to your childhood. I bet you can recall that one person who was always tattling on you. You took an extra cookie from the jar. They told mom. Didn't brush your teeth before bed. They ratted you out. Well, our own bodies are a lot like those childhood tattletales, consistently giving us reports of our health and well-being. Naturally You, a nutrition response testing center, uses a natural, scientific, and non-invasive system of analyzing your body to discover the underlying causes of ill health. Certified practitioners at Naturally You use your body's neurological reflexes and acupuncture points to determine what nutrients your body needs, then designs a dietary supplement program based on your body and condition. If you have struggled with weight, fatigue, or ongoing health issues, Naturally You invites you to join them this Tuesday night for a free workshop. Visit naturallyyou.fit to reserve your spot. That's naturallyyou.fit.
I think during the news break, I need to take a shower after listening to that song, the vaccine song. It's so sick and twisted. There's a headline right now on Drudge Report. They're talking about the vaccinations. We're in a life and death race. That's what they say. Well, let's click through and see exactly. Oh, it's Yahoo, of course. Biden warns we're in a life and death race with vaccine. And, you know, I think I heard him say, yeah, here it is. He also said 90% of American adults will have become eligible for the vaccine. This is by April 19th. So that's eligible. We'll see how many uptake it. But this is not a race between life and death when it comes to this vaccine. I don't know why it took me so long to really figure this out, but I was reading the story about the Amish and seeing that they had already reached herd immunity. This is a race against vaccinations or natural herd immunity. That's the race they're running. Because what they've got to do is as natural herd immunity comes, they've got to be able to get the vaccine in as many people as fast as they can. It's got to happen immediately, not to save lives, but so they can take credit for it so that in the fall they can tell you a new strain is coming and you need to get another shot. See how good the vaccine did last year? You know, when the spring came and most respiratory diseases go away, they'll try to credit the vaccine. We would have reached natural herd immunity anyway. But they want to make sure that the race is between natural herd immunity and the vaccines getting the credit. That's what the race is. And that's what will lead to the new boosters and annual shots.
Mike Madison here. All of us should be flying our U.S. flag. And now's the perfect time to contact a Complete Flag Source to have a flagpole installed at your home or business. For a limited time, all U.S. flags up to 5x8 along with flagpole setups are 15% off. That's 15, 20, and 25-foot in-ground kits, sectional, and aluminum. House spinner poles will keep your flag from wrapping in the wind, and a Complete Flag Source has all of the right brackets. Visit a Complete Flag Source, I-55 North Frontage Road, Jackson, or online at CompleteFlags.com.
Right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison. I'm done with COVID stuff for now, if I could shake it. But there is another disease. Actually, it's a parasite. It is a parasite, and it is here. And people need to start paying attention to this because it is dramatically more dangerous to the United States than COVID ever thought about being. for the health and welfare of the people of the United States. We need to take this one very seriously, so I'm going to get to that in just a second. But I wanted to get to some good news first. There's a story on Axios that says roller skating is back. I was such a good skater. I think I peaked when I was like in the sixth grade. I probably got as much attention from girls in the sixth grade as any point in my entire evolution. Because I was really good at roller skating. It always disappointed me that my kids just didn't have roller skating parties. I was just jonesing to go roller skating. I got a couple of good opportunities, and I showed out. Pulled back my old skills. But anyway, they're saying roller skating's coming back. So that's my good news for the day. Rollerblading got in there for a while. Do you know the hardest thing for a man when it comes to rollerblading? I mean, if a man wants to get really good at rollerblading and rollerblade a lot, you know what the toughest part is? Coming out to your friends and family as gay. Old joke. One of my favorites, though. Rollerblading. Not the most masculine look. Anyway. Yeah, so we've talked about COVID. The vaccine is a race between herd immunity and a vaccinated populace that they can claim victory over COVID with that. That's what the race is now. Understand that. It's surprising it took me this long to figure it out. The Amish showed me the way, getting their own herd immunity. But there is a vile, dangerous, mutated parasite coming our way. And it is already with us. And it will start manifesting its symptoms very, very soon. So people need to be on guard for this. There's very few ways to protect yourself, but if you're creative, you probably can. And I'm talking about the Biden tax and spend administration. This is the parasite that has landed on the collective arses of Americans. The story in the San Diego Union Tribune, when President Joe Biden's team began putting together his infrastructure and jobs package this February, the White House National Economic Council circulated an internal proposal calling for about $3 trillion in new spending and $1 trillion in new tax hikes, according to three people with knowledge of the matter. But it's soon enough. Some members of the economic team second-guessed themselves, concerned that the plan could jeopardize the nation's long-term financial stability. You think? The officials worried that the large gap between spending and revenue would widen the deficit by such a large degree that it could risk triggering a spike in interest rates, which could in turn cause federal debt payments to skyrocket, said people familiar with the matter. So you would think, well, obviously, they said, hold on a second. We can't spend this much money. The deeper we go into debt, the more risky we look as a debtor. We're going to have to pay higher interest rates, you know, just like if your credit score gets too low. Lenders start looking at you a little cross-eyed and say, I don't know. You seem like a big risk to me. I got to charge you a lot of interest to justify making a loan to you. So it must be in this story that they said, well, we're being silly. We can't spend $3 trillion we don't have. This could be a catastrophe. Let's see what it says. Partially in response, the two-pronged package Biden will begin unveiling this week includes higher amounts of federal spending, but also significantly more in new tax revenue, with possibly as much as $4 trillion in new spending and more than $3 trillion in tax increases, said the people who spoke on the condition of anonymity to describe private dynamics. So they are going to suck an additional $2 trillion out of the private sector economy to fund these pipe dreams, infrastructure, Green New Deal bills. This is a parasite. It's absolutely, absolutely amazing what we are about to witness here. Now, I have a lot of beefs with Donald Trump when he was in office, and if you tuned into my show, if you could stomach them, then you heard I disagreed with him on a whole lot of things. But he got one half of one thing right, and that was tax cuts are certainly better for the economy and the health of the American people than our tax hikes. The problem is Donald Trump didn't do any cutting on the spending side and led us to some approaching on record deficits in a time where supposedly the economy was the best it had ever been in the history of planet Earth, yet for some reason we still needed to continue to run trillion-dollar deficits, not including his final year in office, which will probably clock in around $4 trillion in extra debt. But they're not done. If they can't get money from the living, they're taking a look. A progressive Senate Democrat suggested that their new tax plan to tax unrealized capital gains at death should come with a $1 million per person exemption, setting the line 10 times higher than earlier Obama's administration proposals and shielding a larger swath of upper income households. But this is just another swipe at death taxes. Picking the pockets of a corpse to make sure that their greedy heirs, you know, the people in their family that the deceased actually loved and wanted to provide for, heaven forbid they actually receive any of the money that's left over. So they're going to tax us actually at death. And they're just trying to decide how much and how much they're going to let you keep. And how did we get here? How in the world did we get here? This is, there's a guy named Richard Wolf. I don't know if you've heard this guy. Let's see. I'll tell you what, I may take a break first and come back. This clip's a little bit long. He's a socialist economist. And they had him on NPR. So to follow up on last hour, the propaganda around the vaccine, around COVID, the teary message from our CDC director that just, oh shit, please hang in there. With all of that propaganda going out there, NPR, this is your taxpayer-subsidized radio, of which WYAB is not. Kind of a feather in our cap here at WYAB. When you listen to most radio stations, news talk radio stations around here, you're listening to state subsidized. They're using your tax dollars. You get a lot of state money. WYAB has made the principal stance to actually be a free market operation here. But this is NPR. And the funny thing about NPR is it's always kind of ironic is that they're going to do what you're going to hear after the break, which is entertain this socialist economist. Those terms, I don't even know if they can really go together without chuckling a little bit, but they're going to put this guy on. Even though NPR, they've certainly got their socialist side, they take taxpayer-funded money, which is strange because I remember back in the 1990s when the Republicans were going to get rid of, they were going to defund NPR and public television because we already had something like, even in the 90s, 86 channels on television of all kinds of educational programming and everything. And they said, why are we still funding public broadcasting with taxpayer dollars? This was a promise of the Republicans back in the 1990s. It's a little bit why they tricked me into falling in love with them. Strangely enough, NPR still exists. Department of Education still exists. All these are the Republicans, they promise, though, if you just put enough of them in office next time, they pinky swear they'll get it done next time. Anyway, NPR still exists at the taxpayer expense. But they also take in a lot from really big corporations, if you've ever noticed. You know, they're very pristine in the idea that we don't accept commercials. We don't do commercials. We're highbrow entertainment. We don't do the crass commercials. But this was sponsored by Chevron and Halliburton. So they like a little taste of capitalism along with NPR. But anyway, when I come back, I want you to listen to this guy, this socialist economist that they had on NPR. His name is Richard Wolf. They make several really bad mistakes. They've got misconceptions. I don't know exactly how to care. They lie. I guess they lie maybe would be the best way during the course of this segment. But entertaining nonetheless. I'll be right back.
If you're considering renovations, remodels, or roofing, call on Tri-County Restoration. Do you have an insurance claim? We work with all insurance companies. Tri-County offers kitchen and bath remodels, wood floor refinishing, patio and sunroom additions, and is a GAF-certified roofing contractor. And Tri-County Restoration can handle new construction for that home you've always dreamed of. Call Tri-County Restoration, 601-856-2530, or visit our website, tcr.ms. That's tcr.ms.
I'm I am old enough to remember the fall of the Soviet Union. I'm old enough to remember back in the 80s, the USA, you know, the capitalist country versus the communist Soviet Union, the sports contests, the hockey game. It was an interesting time. And in the end, the free society, the free capitalist society won. And it was, you know, really kind of what we all knew would happen, that this communist empire would fall. They were overstretched militarily, and the products were terrible, and the food choices were bad. I mean, it was just, you know, we could take a glimpse inside this communist country and see just how bad it was for the people, and it collapsed as it was. But what a difference a generation makes, huh? Now, listen to this about Russia now. Russia is now moving towards us in the 80s, and we're moving towards Soviet Union in the 80s. The Russian finance ministry has given the green light for Russia's Russian National Wealth Fund to diversify and invest in gold and other precious metals. According to a report by RT, this is part of a broader move to de-dollarize the wealth fund, meaning they see the writing on the wall. That what the Americans over there are doing is kind of what the Soviet Union did. They were just about to collapse our entire economy. They don't want to be holding a bunch of worthless dollars at some point, so the Russians are getting away from the dollar and moving into gold to firm up their finances. Meanwhile, the Russian central bank was aggressively divesting itself of U.S. treasuries. Now, they don't want to hold on to these bonds that we're paying them 1.5% on, and the value of the bond's going to go through the floor. Russia sold nearly half of its U.S. debt in April 2018 alone, dumping $47.4 billion of its $96.1 billion in U.S. treasuries. In January, the value of Russia's gold holdings eclipsed its dollar holdings for the first time ever. So they're moving away from the dollar into something real, which is gold. What are we doing? We're just printing out fake money. Russia's shrinking dollar reserves is no accident. It was an intentional de-dollarization policy outlined by President Putin to lower the country's exposure to the United States and shield it from anyone, the threat of U.S. sanctions. Thank you, Barack Obama. Thank you, Donald Trump. Thank you, Joe Biden. The endless sanctioning of the Russians is going to get them to dump our debt. They're not going to loan us any more money. It's going to cause interest rates to spike. And it caused us to print more money because other countries aren't. They have to exist at the whims of our foreign policy teams like Mike Pompeo or John Bolton. Sanction them. They're not doing what we want. See, we're boss of the world. Well, Russia's going to show us, aren't they? They're dumping our dollars and they're picking up gold. Gold now ranks as the second largest component of Russia's central bank reserves, only behind euros. The Central Bank of Russia has also increased its holding of yuan. The Chinese currency now makes up about 12% of Russian reserves. So we have successfully, and I blame the Democrats largely, but Donald Trump didn't do anything but perpetuate this Russian aggression, NATO expansion, Russia being hostile, we need to counter Russia, they're an adversary, all of these other things. But the Democrats have really stoked the Russian hysteria. So Russia's just basically saying, okay, that's the game you want to play? Then we're not going to loan you any more money. We're going to start doing more business with the Chinese and dumping your dollars. And then when everything goes to hell in a handbasket, the way the United States is leading us, we'll have gold. We'll be just fine. It is amazing to see that I have lived through the fall of the Soviet Union and the rise of the Russian Republic as the United States goes towards Soviet Russia. This is NPR with a socialist economist. His name is Richard Wolff. This guy should be laughed out of the room anytime he speaks. A socialist economist. I would love to sit this guy down and say, so just tell me, you know, what did Venezuela do wrong? What did Russia do wrong? What did these socialist economies do wrong that you think you could fix, that you could just tweak a little bit and make socialism work economically? Now, if you want to be an ideological socialist, this idea of everybody shares, you know, that's just a mental disease. There's not much I can do with you there. But if you want to get into what is supposedly somewhat of a science when it comes to economics, I don't know how you fold it into being a socialist. But this guy sure tries. Listen to this.
Richard Wolff is a socialist economist, like the socialist economist in the United States.
They tell telemarketers when you call, smile. You can hear the smile on the other side of the phone. You can hear this woman smile. He's the socialist economist. Again, this is NPR, taxpayer-subsidized programming.
Are not many. Most economists are very, very pro-capitalism.
Erk! Screeching the brakes right there. That is not true anymore. Because capitalism does not involve things like central banks pricing money, meaning manipulating interest rates, bailing out banks, sending endless streams of printed money to their favored classes, which are the elites. That's not capitalism. But if you watch the air quotes here in the studio, economists who come on things like CNBC, where they parse through, well, Fed policy should do this and Fed policy should do that. And if the Fed just does this or the Fed does that, that just turns capitalism on. We haven't had capitalism, real capitalism here in the United States as the overarching system here for decades and decades. I just want to make that clarification.
Anyway, here's what comes after the boom and bust. Unemployment.
Every 4 to 7 years, suddenly, millions of people lose their job, independent of who they are, what they do, how well they work, how committed they are.
Now, here's the thing that he misses. Okay, so he's a socialist economist, right? What he believes in is entire central planning of the entire economy, of our way of life. Socialism is centrally planned, right? It is the central planning by our central bank, the Federal Reserve, that creates the boom and bust cycle he's describing. It is actually central planning that does that. What happened in the early 2000s? They cut interest rates lower, 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 lower. They built up a bubble in housing prices. And when that market topped out, they built a huge bubble. And when the bubble popped, tons of people lost their jobs. We went into a very deep, dark recession. That was created by central planning. It wasn't capitalism that suddenly everybody said, hey, let's all remodel our houses and buy 6 or 7 houses and flip them all of a sudden. No, that didn't just spontaneously happen. It happened because as they lowered interest rates, housing prices go up and people go, hey, wait a second. Houses keep going up in price. They keep lowering interest rates, which makes the houses go up. If I get a house and they keep lowering interest rates, the house value is going to go up and then I'll just sell it for even more. This is central planning that leads to these booms and busts, but this socialist economist can't see this, I guess.
Everyone in society was always worried about losing their job every 4 to 7 years. Richard says no one would tolerate that system. We tolerate it, he says, because not everyone is affected. One group or another is sort of told, you're going to be the shock absorber.
And here it comes. You can only imagine what groups the socialist is going to point to as who are the shock absorbers. Look, people are at risk of losing their jobs. It's like COVID. You know, they act like if we just get enough people vaccinated, nobody will die anymore. There won't be any more tragedies. We won't have to lower the flags to half staff. We will have cured death because they focused singularly on this one little virus. Well, this is what this socialist guy is making the mistake too. He's, you know, every 4 to 7 years, a bunch of people lose their jobs. Again, these booms and busts are driven by a central bank in the first place. They would not naturally happen, certainly not with the regularity. You'll have bubbles in certain sectors. People will flood into new innovative sectors and it'll get overheated and bust. But the entire economy, when it's entirely manipulated by interest rates by the central bank, that creates the big booms and busts that are pretty much systemic throughout the system. But you're at risk of losing your job any day. Businesses start and end every day, just like lives do. So he is kind of conflating this idea where, oh yeah, during the boom times, everybody's got a job, and then all of us peons lose our job at the same time. It's ridiculous. It's not the way it works.
Sorry. But someone has to do it, and we can't survive as a system if that risk is felt by everybody.
This is the real flaw in capitalism.
Again, it's not capitalism. We're not doing capitalism. Now, I will say this guy's got one thing right, and it's a pretty easy point to latch on to, and it's very popular. And that is the idea that the elites are never hurt by these things. But that's how the system is designed. That's why. It's not capitalism. Capitalism does not print out endless reams of money and give the elites first crack at it, interest-free money. That's not capitalism. We've not had zero interest rates in the United States ever in our history until now, when it's artificially done by the central planners. It's done for the elites. So he's kind of got a point that certain classes of people don't seem to suffer in the downturns, but that's a feature of this system to the people running it, not a bug. That's how it's designed.
The inequality. One group that's badly affected, immigrants.
In the good times, they come in, they get a job. When the economy turns down, they're thrown out.
Here's another group.
You know what else happens? People come in when a harvest comes and they need a bunch of people to pick crops or any other seasonal business. I used to work at a water park. You know what would happen every summer? It would open and we'd all get jobs. And you know what would happen every fall? It would close and we'd all lose jobs. This is what happens. When you need people to satisfy a demand, you get them in. And when that demand is not there, you let them go. That's natural.
Group. Women.
Economy booming, you get a job. Economy shrinking, you go back into the home and be a homemaker.
This is what's happening right now. Women, and really women of color, lost a million more jobs than men.
Now, I wonder, why would you think, let's just really think about this for a second, why would women not have returned to the workplace as much as men? Is it economic prejudice? Is it racism? Is it sexism? Or is it the fact that the bureaucrats, your Cuomos, your Gavin Newsoms, your Anthony Faucis, that have forced children to stay home during the day might have needed a caretaker home with them so they couldn't go out and get another job? Could that possibly have played into this? No, of course not. It's got to be just sexism or racism or one of these things.
During and after the COVID recession.
And here comes the one which I hope you've already guessed. African-Americans
in
American history. You couldn't throw them out, although there were people who tried. So you made them an in-house, an inside-the-country shock absorber. What is the shock? Capitalism. And who gets fired first? The African-Americans. And who has to wait until the economy is good again? The African-Americans.
This part of capitalism is the systemic racism part.
That is NPR, your taxpayer-funded radio, telling you that capitalism is systemically racist. Now, again, what we are experiencing is not capitalism. It is so divorced from what capitalism is. Capitalism is based on things like saving. The basis of capitalism is capital, right? So you create something. You make a profit, you accumulate capital, and then you deploy that capital in other productive ways so that it creates new industries and new jobs. We don't do that anymore. What we do is we just borrow. There is no capital. There's just debt. We have debtalization. And this idea that that blacks are the shock absorber, so we hire them last and we fire them first, is ridiculous, number one. Now, if the statistics bear out that more blacks lose jobs during recessions than whites or sooner or any of these other things, I can guarantee you, as somebody who's run a business and knows a lot of business owners, that is not ever a racial issue. It is the nature of the positions that these people are in. Now, if you believe that it's all racist, I got to tell you, fix your schools. You might find that you become a more productive part of an organization that they really resist letting you go. I've been let go of jobs when I wasn't valuable. So have a lot of white people and Asian people and Hispanic people and American Indians, Hindus. I mean, this just happens. The people that are held on to the longest are the ones that are most valuable. So the solution is not to look at the color of someone's skin. The solution is to get the skills necessary to make yourself incredibly valuable to that company. Anyway, this is NPR having a socialist economist on tell you why capitalism is white supremacy. Gets worse when I come back, though. I'm going to play you three little segments from a woman who was trying to stoke the anti-Asian stuff. She has got a theory, I'll tell you what, that has got white supremacists just picking up classes of people and then shoving them back down again and picking more up and shoving it back down. I mean, it is just stunning to even listen to. And she does at least say in this, it's a theory of hers. But again, you're going to listen to the host very enthusiastically support this woman as they try to victimize or cast the Asian community as victims. This is the new thing we're doing now. We ignore all the tremendous successes of the Asian American community and instead try to convince them that they are helpless victims to the white patriarchy. I hope this doesn't work, but it's gaining some traction, and this woman is probably going to be the one kind of like that. What's the nut job that wrote White Fragility? And she's running around making millions of dollars teaching corporations how to hate white people. Well, this woman is trying to do it on the Asian thing. I got to give her a little bit of credit. She's, you know, she's identified a trend and she's looking to capitalize on it. Well, listen to her when you come back. You won't believe the stuff that she is theorizing about race relations in the United States. Shocking stuff. I'll be right back.
Think back to your childhood. I bet you can recall that one person who was always tattling on you. You took an extra cookie from the jar. They told mom. Didn't brush your teeth before bed. They ratted you out. Well, our own bodies are a lot like those childhood tattletales, consistently giving us reports of our health and well-being. Naturally You, a nutrition response testing center, uses a natural, scientific, and non-invasive system of analyzing your body to discover the underlying causes of ill health. Certified practitioners at Naturally You use your body's neurological reflexes and acupuncture points to determine what nutrients your body needs, then designs a dietary supplement program based on your body and condition. If you have struggled with weight, fatigue, or ongoing health issues, Naturally You invites you to join them this Tuesday night for a free workshop. Visit naturallyyou.fit to reserve your spot. That's naturallyyou.fit.
Thanks for joining me. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. There's another casualty of COVID is I believe that the Olympics in, is it in Tokyo? I think I'm pretty sure it's in Japan. I think they've said no fans. I'm not sure if it's just nobody can travel to Japan, but maybe the Japanese can go. But definitely not going to be the crowds in the, which is so sad. These kids, they have worked their whole lives to make it to the Olympics. They finally get their moment. And this is even worse than, you know, college basketball. You got 4 years to get in there and get in front of a crowd if you're on a good basketball. This is once every 4 years. You miss one Olympics, you might age out of being competitive. So these people, and this time they've waited 5 years. The Olympics are supposed to take place last year. They're having them this year. Had to wait 5 years. And they're not going to let them have any fans because of, you know, COVID hysteria. But on the flip side of that, while we may not be able to sit in the stands for the Tokyo Olympics, we do have a front row seat to the Oppression Olympics here in the United States. Now, this has been quite a contest over the past several years. You've got all kinds of different minority communities jockeying, coming around the stretch. For a while there, the trans community was really making a hard push, and then BLM came out and overtook the lead again. But they found a new contestant. They've decided to, I don't know what, inject some performance-enhancing drugs into the Asian community that was at the back of the pack going, we're not really feeling oppressed. We're doing pretty well here. Well, not everybody likes us. There's some jerks in society. Yeah, we got to put up with some jerks like everybody else, but we seem to be doing okay. Matter of fact, Harvard got so sick of seeing us get into, they started stopping us from coming in. We thought that was a little unfair, but I guess we'll go to other Ivy League schools. But no, that's not good enough for the race hustlers and the race pimps. They've decided to get a moped in the back of the field and tell the Asians to hop on. We're getting into the Oppression Olympics here. We got to get out front. And here's the woman leading the charge, apparently. And I want you to listen to her theories on how the Asian community in the United States is treated within the context of how the blacks are treated. And this is all at the hands of white supremacists. Now, I would really hope. Look, the Asian community is smart. Let's just say that. I made a joke about them the other day, how they drive. You know, probably not PC to do. It's just funny. There's all kinds of funny things about men, too. I'm a man. I don't care if you do a stereotypical joke about a man. It's not going to offend me. But anyway, this is all at the hands of white supremacy in this. And I just hope that the Asian community is as smart as they are in math and science and logic and all these other things, that they see through this. Please tell me they are not going to convince them of this. Listen to this lady. She'll say her name in here. I didn't write it down, but she'll say her name in here. Listen to the enthusiasm of the interviewer here. This is from the Slate magazine podcast called GabFest. That's where this comes from.
We're joined by Claire Jean Kim, who's a professor of political science and Asian American studies at UC Irvine. She's working on a book, Asian Americans in an Anti-Black World, which is a great title.
What a great title. Asian Americans in an Anti-Black World. You know where this is headed already.
Claire Jean Smith, welcome to the GabFest. Can you start by talking about this idea of racial triangulation and how it is important to understand what's happening with racial and class conflict in America?
Hi, David. Thanks for having me. So you're asking me about the racial triangulation idea, and that's a theory that I advanced in a 1999 article by that name. And in that article, I was really trying to say, when we look at how Asian Americans are racialized and positioned in U.S. society, it's different than how Black people are racialized and positioned. So how do we think through that difference? And I tried to postulate that, you know, Asian Americans are triangulated vis-a-vis Blacks and whites, seen as more foreign, but also superior to Black people. So there are different axes for assessing these different groups. I've actually moved away from that theory. It seems to be taken up by some people right now, but I am moving away from that for my book, Asian Americans in an Anti-Black World, which I'm finishing up right now.
Okay, so she's setting this up. It's interesting to know she's been working on this for 20 years. First article appeared in 1999. I've been trying to convince the Asians we're getting screwed, but nobody's really listening to me because, well, frankly, our community's been so darn successful, people don't have an appetite for hearing how they were oppressed. But anyway, she's got theories, and I want you to listen to how she says whites use the Asian community and kind of pit them against, or we move them up and down in our relationship with the Black community. I mean, this is a pretty convoluted theory. It's interesting. She's dropped the theory from 20 years ago. She's on to this little nugget.
And you're moving away from it and toward what exactly?
What I'm moving toward is I'm trying to theorize again, where are Asians positioned in U.S. society? And the theory is that most of Asian American studies as a field has focused on white supremacy and how white people push down Asian Americans or persecute them through various kinds of laws. And what I'm...
What laws exist to persecute Asian Americans today? Am I missing something? I'll talk to Stephen Utroska on Thursday. Ask if Mississippi has any draconian laws against the Asian community. Never noticed them before.
Interested in is looking at how the racial order is structured in addition by anti-Blackness. So what happens when we think about white supremacy as pushing all non-white groups down, but anti-Blackness as lifting up all not Black groups?
So here's this woman's theory, and I'm going to let her keep going. Her theory is that whites are trying to keep everybody down. But we keep them down in layers. And we're hell-bent on keeping the Black community down first. I mean, that's the main thing. As long as we can keep the Black community at the lowest rung of the ladder, that's the... But we're pushing everybody else down, too. So I guess we're stacking them. I got to tell you, you can look at my bank account. You can look at my life. I am just not even aware or exercising the tremendous power I have as this white male. I didn't get the memo. I had no idea I was able to just all by myself just stratify all races and all people in each race according to, you know, the layers that I want. Kind of like a Mexican 7-layer dip, I guess. That's what this woman thinks that white people are up to. to other white people, are you having a meeting out there or something? Is there something I'm missing? I've never heard of anything like this in my life.
And that would mean Asian Americans are sort of pushed down by white supremacy, but also elevated by anti-blackness, elevated over black people. So that leads me to theorizing that Asian Americans have something, a property called not blackness, that advantages them. That is sort of like, you could think of it as a structural.
This is, and when you listen to this, understand this. This is one of the most racist presentations I've ever heard in my life. She basically just said, well, you know, I mean, she's trying to give it like a, this is how white people view it. This is how she's coming at it. But what she's saying is that, you know, Asians are no good, but at least they're not blacks. That's the theory that she's proposing here.
Advantage relative to black people, even as at the same time, they have not whiteness, which is a structural disadvantage relative to whites.
Which makes it would seem to me, highly complex.
Yeah, you think? All right, I've got one more clip. I need to take a break. I've got one more clip from this one. So this is the idea here that we somehow, the whites are just, we're stratifying everybody. We're deciding when you're up, when you're down. I mean, we are just pulling the strings. And I guess we're supposedly sitting at the top, which is just so weird because I see white homeless people that apparently don't know their power. I see white unemployed people on the news that just apparently don't understand their tremendous privilege where they should just be getting all the plum jobs. This is insanity. I hope the Asian community is not falling for this. This nut job has got one more theory she's postulating on how our society is stratified, all at the behest, all at the just instantaneous command of the overarching white supremacy in this country. Like I said, if my fellow white people out there are having some kind of a meeting where these things are being discussed, I'd like to get a heads up. I don't agree with you. I'm not going to join in, but maybe I'm missing something. I'll be right back.
Food allergies know how difficult it can be to find quality, affordable restaurants that cater to your needs. That's why the folks over at Your Pie have made a commitment to ensure everyone can enjoy great-tasting pizza. Your Pie offers gluten-free dough, vegan, non-dairy cheese, and non-dairy sorbet. Just ask for it next time you're in line. Matter of fact, just mention any allergy you have, and the folks at Your Pie will go over the top to make sure you can safely enjoy their delicious food. That's Your Pie in Gluckstadt, where food allergies never stop you from being able to express your inner pizza.
Right into this world, all alone. God takes your soul, you're on your own.
All right, final segment. I'm going to finish up listening to this this Asian woman and her theories about how white supremacy is playing everybody, you know, putting everybody in society exactly where we want them. It's insane. It's insane. Unless, again, maybe I'm missing white people meetings. Maybe I'm not on the newsletter chain. I don't know. You know, I'm a bit of an outsider. I don't play the game. I don't really believe in having to be part of a group. So maybe I'm missing something, but I see no evidence of it either. But anyway, I'll let her finish up. But before I do that, this is something I think parents out there would appreciate. I just saw something that is akin to seeing a, you know, a one-of-a-kind stamp that you just get in the mail by accident, you know, or seeing a bare-chested Kruger. Kudos to you if you get that joke. You can email me and let me know. But something so rare just happened. If you're a parent, I've got two kids. They're just a few days north of being 20 years old now, so been teenagers for a while. Guess what just happened? This is amazing. Last night, I gave my son some advice. He took that advice. It worked out really well for him, and he acknowledged me for it. This just does not happen in the sequel, and particularly in this short a period of time. You know, it usually takes your child to be about 35 years old before they understand that parents had some value back in the days. I know when I was a teenager, I didn't think my parents knew what they were talking about. I was so much smarter than them, but wow, just now I get a text. Things worked out based on Dad's advice. that's the kind of thing you just can't buy and you just don't see often. All right, only a few minutes left. Let's listen to our Asian author here as she tries to give a little juice to the Asians in the oppression Olympics here.
Which makes it would seem to me, a highly complex and moving picture to try to look at this, because you're talking about two different groups as those two are changing in real time.
Yes, this is, this guy doesn't say it the right way, but basically it's like, wow, this is really complex. You think white people have this power? Yeah, I mean, this is really, this is like some crazy conspiracy theory is what this is.
Exactly. It's a fluid, dynamic picture. And one of the reasons that I think this theory makes a difference, like what difference does it make how we see how Asians are positioned, is my argument is because of their not blackness, which is attributed to them from the beginning, from the time the first Chinese come on shore in California around the gold rush. You know, if we think about anti-blackness as a structural feature of U.S. society and think about the society wanting to reproduce that sort of anti-blackness, what happens is Asian Americans are lifted up periodically. There are certain openings historically where Asian Americans are lifted up.
See, every now and then, us white masters, we go, hey, let's give the Asians a little bit of air. Just a little bit until we're done with them. This is what this woman is proposing.
Because that helps the broader society keep black people in their place. It might be defensive.
Oh, okay. So we let the Asians up and maybe give them a little bit of success or, you know, give them a couple of advantages here or there. We allow them to exist as normal human beings, but only if it hurts the black community. This woman is out there preaching this stuff to people.
And then Jim Crow during the Cold War. And then there are other examples after that. But my point being that Asian Americans have this fluidity because that helps to sort of nail down structural anti-blackness.
What do you say? What do you say to these people? I mean, I guess this woman's just got to hustle on. She's going to be the, and I can't, what is that? What was that? Beverly DeAngelis? No, I think that's the actress on Family Vacation. I don't know. Who's the woman that's go out there with, was it anti-whiteness? What is it? Whatever her job. These are race hustlers. They make a lot of money doing it. This woman will put out a book and she'll sell a bunch of copies. Probably not to Asian people because they're smart enough not to read garbage like that. But it is quite amazing. Again, that's Slate Magazine's Gab Fest. And they're entertaining this stuff to further stoke hatred between every single class. I mean, I guess they just couldn't leave well enough alone. They noticed that, you know, whites and Asian people seem to be getting along swimmingly, and so they just have to get in there and make sure that they screw that up. We've gone insane. It's all the time I got. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how